Hello and welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Liz Tan.
Thank you very much.
Nice to have you here. Now, for the record, can you tell us what years you were at BFM?
Crikey. I think I probably started DJing around 1988, maybe the end of 87. And then I was the station manager after Simon Lahn. So I was station manager from 1990 through to the beginning of 92, I think. Yeah.
And then?
And then I went to the States and did what was going to be a broadcast journalism degree in Washington, D.C. And somehow, and to this day, I'm still not exactly sure how it happened, I ended up doing film and television instead. Worked for a while at the Discovery Channel in the States and then came back to New Zealand and started working as an assistant director, which is what I do to this day.
Wow. So in 92, when you finished up here, that was it? You didn't carry on doing a radio show?
No, because I left the country. I mean, I think I carried on for a little while before I left the country, but I left the country shortly thereafter. And I was station manager at a very kind of crossroads time for BFM when it was kind of breaking out of its student radio fully supported and funded kind of radio bosom era and having to kind of think about what kind of station it wanted to be. We knew that we didn't want to be a commercial radio station, but we were really, our survival as a station was really threatened because we could no longer count on the AUSA to fund us. So we had to start looking for financial support from elsewhere. And so it was really a matter of kind of blazing a trail that hadn't been blazed, you know, dancing with the advertising agencies and yet not losing our BFM-ness. Mm. And so it was a really interesting time of going from being kind of all volunteer to starting to pay people. In particular, you know, it was around this time that we started paying the morning DJ. And that was, you know, for a lot of BFMers, that was kind of like, how do we feel about this? You know, paying, you know, everyone's always been a volunteer. And that was kind of one of the great things about the station. And then to go to a situation where suddenly you have some paid staff, but we had to do it, you know, to compete. And so it was really exciting, but really kind of interesting and stressful and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think I was the youngest station manager at the time. I was 21, just. It was a huge responsibility. You know, I had a paid staff, I think, of about 10 or 11, and then there were all the volunteers, and you had to negotiate with the AUSA, and there was a board of directors, and there was all this kind of stuff going on. So it was fantastic. But after 18 months or 2 years, I was like, oh my God, I had the love and the energy and the enthusiasm, but I didn't have the management experience. I just kind of, you know, jumped in there, boots and all, and thought, okay, this is how I want it to work.
Yeah. I imagine it wasn't plain sailing when you took the job over in the first place either.
No. Yeah. Well, there's always, you know, I mean, BFM has changed a lot since I left. I mean, there always within an organisation like this has to be kind of an ebb and flow and it has to find its way. And yeah, there were a lot of people who were unhappy with the way BFM was going when I came on. And one of the first things we did was replace the programme director, which resulted in a lawsuit. So that was a really good way for me to start. I remember feeling, you know, coming to work every day feeling sick because I was being taken to court. We settled out of court, but BFM won because we got Paul Casserly as our program manager and we got Graham Hill back as the breakfast host. I look back, I mean, I'm going to sound like a golden oldie, but for me it was the golden age of BFM because we had people like Marcus Lush, Graham Hill, Paul Casserly, you know, Eddie Chambers, Russell, who was just fantastic at script writing. We had really talented people. And then we had the musicians, you know, a lot of musicians who were involved in bands or went on to become involved in live music were involved with BFM. And so it was a really vibrant time. And to have someone like Paul Casserly, who's gone on to do, you know, Eating Media Lunch and Unauthorized History of New Zealand, I mean, he's a really talented man. To have someone like him as the station manager, I mean, it was really exciting. And then to have Eddie and Russell doing the ads and to know that the advertising agencies were listening to our ads, you know, when we insisted, I mean, that was one of the cool things, was that usually if a company wants to advertise, an advertising agency makes the ad and charges lots of money. And BFM always said, no, we will play our own ads. We will make our own ads for you. And we charged like a ridiculous fee, like $20 to make it, you know, doable. And we made better ads, you know, and that was, you know, that was something that was really exciting. So this first track is by a DC group called Bad Brains and one of my favorite groups and kind of an you know, very evocative for me of that era when I was at BFM, and it's called She's Calling You.
'88 to '92. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a short time, but I bet it didn't seem like a short time.
No, it was a really intense time. I was living on Queen Street in what is now the Sky City IMAX, you know, it used to be Civic House. And back then there were a whole bunch of people who were living in the inner city illegally. And you couldn't buy milk or bread or anything. You know, you had to go to Ponsonby or down to the ferry building or something. But it was a really interesting time with a whole bunch of people living in the inner city, and it was a very vibrant sort of community, and we all went out every night, and I think I was working at the power station while I was at university, so, you know, I saw Tackhead and Gary Clale and, you know, some fantastic bands. Yeah, it was intense.
I've got to ask you, how did you get involved in BFM in the first place?
I was away from New Zealand from 85 to 87, and when I came back to go to university, I started working at Festival Records. which is no longer, was folded into Mushroom. And I was working at Festival Records. I used to listen to BFM, but, you know, I was way too scared to come up here. And one of the sales reps did a show. He, you know, suggested I come up and kind of nudged me into taking a show. And I did and got hooked and, you know, started to do more. And I think I used to do a wire. Might have done a couple of evening shows. And it was 1990 was quite a big year for me because I was doing a commerce degree. I was in my final year and my father died very suddenly and he was Chinese. And so I had this real crisis of what I was actually doing and why I was doing it and who I was doing it for. Dropped out of university and was doing a lot more at BFM. And in the midst of all that, Simon Lan came into the studio one day while I was doing a show and said, "Have you heard that I'm leaving?" And I said, "Have you thought about applying for my job?" And I went, "No." And he said, "Well, I need to appoint an interim station manager, and if you're interested in applying, I'll appoint you." And I went, "Oh, okay." Because I was like, okay, duh, you know, how can you not? And I was convinced that, you know, I didn't have a shit show, but there we were. I was the station manager going, "Oh, no, now what do I do?"
With regards getting on air, did you...
I had done some radio... campus radio stuff in the States.
Oh, right.
I went to an international college school in the States, and there was a student radio, and so I had done some of those, and I think I might have even had tapes of that. So, and I knew a lot of the people, like Dom Nola, you know, I knew her. But yeah, I mean, and that's how people got in.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, you gave me a show.
Exactly.
I've been eternally grateful, you know.
Yeah, and
I've got to say,
it's paid off.
Yeah, I've got to say thanks to Jonathan Roper and Larry DeZuta, who both would get me up on their radio show and stuff. And they did that for years and years, but I was like not keen to sort of actually take the plunge, you know.
I know, yeah. I mean, you kind of, I think back then, you know, you realize as you get older that everyone's as scared as you are, but... when you're young, you think you're the only scared person.
And, of course, 1990 was a very exciting time for the Auckland music scene. I know you were really good friends with Slave and Otis, and New Zealand hip-hop was blowing up, and as was New Zealand reggae, and we had all these sort of artists buying.
And we were all hanging out together. I think because there wasn't that much to do, there weren't that many clubs, and we all kind of lived in the inner city, and we were all kind of a bit underground. We all hung out together, and so everyone worked with everyone else and did everyone else's music and went to everyone else's gigs. And so it was a very, I mean, that's one of the things I like about Bad Brains, is that it's reggae but with rock influences, and, you know, the whole kind of DC Fugazi thing plays into what they do as well. And Auckland at that time really felt like a melting pot of music. And now there's really exciting stuff happening, but I think because it's gotten broader and sort of come up overground rather than underground, people get isolated a lot more, I think, in their genres, and so you can get quite isolated in a certain genre. Okay, this next one is one of my favourite hip-hop tracks. You know, hip-hop has changed a lot since the late 1980s. This is Eric B. and Rakim, Paid in Full.
This is a journey into sound. This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value. When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
Would you mind saying that again?
You make me feel so good.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin from our on-the-spot passport.
Oh, my God. The music just turns me on.
thinking of a master plan.
Death with the record, death with the record,
thinking of a master plan.
Death with the record, death with the record,
thinking of a master plan. This ain't nothing but sweat inside my hands. So I dig into my pocket, all my money spent. So I get deep up, still coming up with lint. So I start my mission, leave my residence, thinking how could I get some dead presidents. I need money. I used to be a stick up kid, so I think of all the devious things I did. I used to roll up, roll up, roll up. I used to roll up, roll up. I used to roll up, this is a hole up. Ain't nothing funny, stop smiling. We still don't nothing move but the money. But now I learn to earn cause I'm righteous. I feel great, so maybe I might just search for a 9 to 5. If I strive, then maybe I stay alive. So I walk up the street, whistling this, feeling out of place, cause man do I miss a pen and a paper, a stereo, a taper. Me and Eric being a nice big plate of fish, which is my favorite dish. But without no money, it's still a wish. Cause I don't like to dream about getting paid, so I dig into the books of the rhymes that I made. So now it's a test to see if I got pulled. Hit the studio, cause I'm paid in full.
Pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
You go to your girl's house and I go to mine, cause my girl is definitely mad cause it took us too long to do this album.
Yo, I hear what you're saying, so let's just pump the music up and count our money.
Yo, but check this out. Yo, Eli, turn the bass down and just let the beat keep on rocking.
And we out of here.
Pump up the volume.
Wait a minute, you better talk to my mother.
Oh, good night, kids. Was it good enough for you?
It was sort of more an innocent and a more innocent time for hip-hop. I mean, you look at the videos and they just seem so naive and kind of laughable, and you listen to it and it's kind of unstructured and not as complicated and doesn't assault your senses as much, but it's great. And, you know, I really love those songs, and sometimes, you know, when you get a bit tired of all the kind of new hip-hop, which kind of assaults your senses, whether it's good or bad, it's so full-on and layered and... Yeah, well, there was always kind of the personalities involved were interesting. I got the odd phone call from a certain member of my staff who couldn't come to work because he was in jail. And then a couple of the things that I'm really proud of that happened while I was station manager was, as I said, it was a crossover from purely grassroots community student to kind of semi-self-funded. And I put an ad in the National Business Review, which is a newspaper you wouldn't associate with BFM, a half-page ad saying, "Do you want to own your own radio station?" Basically asking people with skills to volunteer on the board of directors. And we got a lawyer from TVNZ, we got a great human resources person, we got someone from the IT industry. And so we got all these amazing people who were professionals and really talented who loved BFM and were only too happy to donate a few hours every month to be part of, you know, our attempt to kind of global world domination of BFM, which has actually happened because we're streaming. So, you know, we have taken over the world.
And prior to that, there wasn't a board of directors?
I think there was a board of directors, but it was very AUSA.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was very much driven by AUSA. And so it was partly kind of wanting to protect ourselves and sort of broaden the horizon and also wanting to give ourselves those skills and knowing we couldn't afford to pay for, you know, a top entertainment lawyer or a top human resources person. But these people, you know, because BFM was so cool, they wanted to be involved and were willing to donate their time. And so I thought that was fantastic. And the other thing that happened while I was station manager was the logo, which exists to this day, which Johnny Payne and I designed because he was my flatmate on Queen Street. And I didn't like, I can't even remember what the old BFM logo was, but I didn't like it. And so, you know, I thought, oh, maybe it's time for a change. And we designed it and I thought it rocked and, you know, it still rocks to this day.
It still rocks, yeah.
Yeah, and Johnny Payne is now in Singapore doing, yeah. Loving it and doing design and
still
music.
Still doing and graphics and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Another fantastic BFM band, the Pixies. This track is called "This Monkey Is This Monkey Going to Heaven." And for years, I used to think it was "This Month Is Going to Happen." So I had to play it for that reason. But yeah, it's one of my favorite songs.
Control the sea. Got killed by 10 million pounds of sludge from New York and New Jersey. In the sky.
devil is six. The devil is six. The devil is six. And if the devil is six, then God is seven. Then God is seven. Then God is seven.
This monk is gone to heaven. 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 This monk is gone to heaven.
While you were station manager, obviously you saw a lot of young people sort of come up through the ranks, as it were, or just people wandering off the street who ended up becoming major talents. Is there anyone sort of that springs to mind that you particularly helped to mentor? Or
no, I wish I could take credit.
Well, I think, for instance, I don't think Slave and Otis were doing radio.
No, they probably
weren't.
But
you knew them.
I knew them,
yeah.
We hung out together. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a good possibility you encouraged them.
Yeah, yeah, they got a radio show. And, yeah, they used to come up sometimes and hang out on my radio show. And we used to do something called I the Jury for a while, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was like a record review sort of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think me and Slave used to, me and Mark used to do that. That was good.
And they were just kids then, too.
They were.
Like, if you were 21, I mean, they must have only been about
they
like
were teenagers.
18 or something.
Yeah, and there were people, I can't take credit for Frances Chan, but she was around, and there were some great voices from back then. Yeah, kids. Yeah, we were all kids.
And it was cool that, you know, you were here at the time when Paul Casserly, Graham Hill and Russell Kerr were all here. They were like a creative sort of team, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Paul Casserly was just a fantastic, you know, asset for the station. And so was Graham, you know, he put so much energy into the morning show and he really personified it. To this day, when I think of BFM Breakfast, that's who I think of. You know, him standing there, because he was always doing it standing, and, you know, he was just fantastic. Yeah.
And Marcus Lush came along after Graham, didn't he?
Yeah, he was doing, I think he was doing talkback.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was doing night shows and talkback, and so honing his craft.
So you left, went to the States to follow a career, which didn't end up being the career you wanted to do. Mm. Any regrets having left BFM?
Oh, you know, yeah, sometimes. But I also always felt strongly with BFM that there had to be regular infusions of fresh blood. One of the strengths of BFM was the newness and the youngness and the energy and that sort of thing coming up. And I really did feel that we all reached our use-by date. So, you know, it was a fantastic and intense time of my life. And I still think, you know, BFM is probably one of the best radio stations in the world, if not the best for me. And that era was, you know, absolutely incredible for me. It took me a long time to get used to paying for concerts and music.
Yeah, that's right. No more free CDs.
I know. And the free backstage passes. I was like, yeah. Oh, really? Is that how much it costs? But yeah, you know, it sort of, you have to know when to go, you know, and I guess, you know, that's one of the issues is that, you know, I still think I'm cool and hip and whatever, but, you know, hello. You know, this could have been I had to have a New Zealand band in here, and this could have been one of any, like the NRA, which I have on vinyl, but don't have at my fingertips. And like you said, you know, Mark and Otis and some fantastic, and Ruamoko and, you know, Damn Native, and there was just a lot of talent. But the Headless Chickens kind of were one of the leaders, and it was fantastic to see them on stage, you know, a few months ago. This is one of my favourite songs from them, Expecting to Fly. We'll be right back.
like rifle shots as everyone grows dim. We need a mirror to reflect upon this mess we're in, and we sing. Your happy day is here again. 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 I heard that you were thin, so I got you some religion to cuddle to your skin. And your body makes you nervous about sagging mental health. If I was you, I'd trade you in and find somebody else. And we sing, your happy day is here again. 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 Your happy day is here again.
Well, your thoughts, in fact, about BFM having reached 40 years old and the state of the station now. Like you said, you still listen from time to time. And
Yeah, no, I do, often. My dial probably goes National BFM, National BFM. Well, I'm 40 as well, so I think that's a good sign that BFM and I have reached, you know, 40, and are still in pretty good shape. I think it's great. I think it's, when I was involved with BFM, it was really touch and go as to whether the station would survive. So I think, you know, the fact that BFM is still not only alive, but alive and kicking and strong and kind of leading the way in, you know, and still doing things like the summer series and doing gigs. And I think that's just incredible and fantastic and speaks to, you know, and speaks to the vibrancy of the people involved. From the On You Sound stable, and I was a huge On You Sound fan. And I kind of think there's a real gap now in the sort of music sphere, you know, which hasn't really been taken over. I mean, sort of the Massive Attack kind of stable kind of cover it, and maybe Thievery kind of touch on it. But there's no kind of like stonking on you sound, for me anyway. So this is Gary Clale and Andy Farley, and it's a remix of Half Cut for Confidence with Jack the Biscuit.
He was born in 1964.
Liz, finally, tell us what you're doing nowadays.
Nowadays, I work as a first AD or first assistant director in features, and in between features I do commercials. And it's interesting, you know, a number of BFM people have gone on to visual media. I guess there's more money in it. And, you know, but Jude Anaru and Paul Cassidy and Marcus, well, Marcus is still in media. But yeah, so I do that, and I've been very, very fortunate really to work with some fantastic people. That's, you know, it's similar to working in radio, but kind of on a much more expensive and bigger scale. So yeah, it's been fun. Not a real job.
What sort of things do you make?
I worked on Whale Rider.
Oh, right.
And since then I've done a couple more films with Nicky Caro, who's just, you know, a fantastic director and an incredible woman. So we did North Country together in America, which was great. Two Kiwi chicks rocking it, telling the Americans what to do. And last year we did Vintner's Luck in France, mostly in France, and that's going to come out later this year. So looking forward to that. And I worked on Lord of the Rings, like, you know, most of the people in the industry. And that was fantastic. It was incredible. It was a long process. It was 18 months, and it was a lot of hard work, but it was fantastic. So that's been good. And a couple of other New Zealand films. I got to go to Jamaica and do a film called One Love with Don Letts directing. So that was pretty amazing.
Oh my God, I want to see it.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. It's called One Love. And it's got Kamani Marley in it, and another woman. And I think it's probably really bad, but it's kind of. But I happened to be in.
Was it
in,
like a straight to DVD movie or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah. Have you ever come across a movie called Dance Hall Queen?
Yes.
Those guys, Don Letts directed. I think he was involved with Dance Hall Queen. Anyway, so it was the same group of people, and this was their second film. And it was kind of a musical Romeo and Juliet story. So it's the Rasta guy from the bad side of the tracks falling in love with the preacher's daughter, and there's a musical competition, so you get every musical style, which was amazing, you know. And Kamani Marley, who sounds just like his dad, it's freaky.
Exactly.
But a friend of mine who's Jamaican emailed me and said, look, you know, this film's going to be a nightmare, but it'll be great, you know, do you want to do it? And I was like, are you kidding? So, yeah, I went over to Jamaica for 2 months and did this film. And, you know, we had I had to explain to the Norwegian DP that he wasn't going to stop the crew from getting stoned at lunchtime. It's like they do it every day and you're not going to stop them. And we had to get the extras to not, you know, be on the bong in the back of shot when we were rolling. You know, can you hide that now? We're about to shoot. And, you know, shooting in a Kingston garrison, really, which was it was completely locked down. The police hadn't been in for over 5 years, and it was run by this you know, one
gang,
and they controlled who went in and out. And to go in, we had to all pull up in convoy in all our trucks and buses at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and these young guys, they looked like 15, got on with, you know, machine guns, and we drove in. And it was the only place in Jamaica where we had a complete lockdown, because if we could hear a stereo, there was a guy next to me all day, a lieutenant, and if I could hear a stereo, I'd go, oh, you know, there's a bit of music we can hear. And he'd send off one of the guys and then turn it off. It was wicked. You know, and just a lot of guns and a lot of ganja and a lot of, you know, and a lot of violence too. And kind of the sex, you know, like I'm used to, you know, on film sets in New Zealand and other places where I've worked, it's all fairly professional. And I'm and being the first AD, I'm kind of, you know, kind of the boss, not really the boss, but you know, I'm kind of the voice, and so I'm used to being treated that way. And but in Jamaica, they think of you as a woman first and your job second. So even like the catering guy would be coming on to me, you know, on set, and I'd be like, excuse me, I'm trying to do my job. Hey, sister, and me like your skin, you know. And I'm like, okay, you know what. It was really funny. And Kamani had security guys who were, because the Malis are quite freaked out by Jamaica. They don't live there, most of them, and they don't necessarily feel safe there. And so he had security who were armed. And, you know, and I had this rule on set that if your cell phone went off, I had it for the day. And of course, his security guard's cell phone goes off, and I said, you know, you have to give me your phone. And he's got a red strap in one hand and a spliff in the other, and he hoicks up his T-shirt, and I can see his gun, you know, in his crotch, and he's like, me not giving you my cell phone. Or, you know, not in that accent, I'm doing it really badly, but I was like, okay. And we're having this stare down, and Kamani, bless him, came up and said, you're disrespecting me, you know, to him. When your cell phone goes off, don't do it again, and kind of diffuse the situation. But it was one of those things, you know, it's like, oh. And but they called me in Jamaica, they called me, little girl, go on like she big.
Because you were bossy, yes.
Because I was bossy.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming into the Historical Society, Liz.
You're very welcome.
A pleasure to
a
have you.
A lot of fun. Excellent. So this is kind of, for me, a completely groundbreaking song in the history of music. Sugar Hill Gang with Apache.
Power, I will never break down.
Big
no, sir, I don't mess around.
Oh!
Like Kiyosaki, of course it's me, a better known as the Master G. I'm fucking them squads, sense the danger. When it's stung by the rapping ranger, had a little talk with my medicine man. He said, get them squads fast as you can. To all you girls that wanna join my tribe, just move to my rhythm and feel my vibe. Put up a fuss in the end, you'll agree. But when you come inside my TV, as I said before, you can sense the danger when you're stung by the rapping ranger. With Silver and I take a ride, all you chicks better step aside. I sting the squalls, then run away. Ho! Silver is what I'll say. Ho! Signals work. They were jamming off a record that said it best. Now what you hear is not a test.